Welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porath here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll have Predators head coach John Hines joining us at 7:30. Trey Wingo at 8 o'clock. And then at 9:30, our man Skillsy, Hal Gill, will join us at 9:30 to look ahead to Predator season getting underway tonight. So a lot to get to today here on the show. But right now, talking some Tennessee Titans. And it looks like, Joe, they could be on the verge of losing their offensive coordinator. Arthur Smith, as we know, a very popular head coaching candidate right now in the NFL. He's been offered interviews by, I believe, every single team that has a job opening outside of Philadelphia at this point, with their job just recently coming open with the firing of Doug Peterson. But Arthur Smith, yesterday, Joe, held a second interview with the Atlanta Falcons. So that would tell you the first one went quite well. There's pretty heavy interest there from Atlanta. Arthur Smith with a second interview with the Falcons. So if he's the front runner right now for the Atlanta Falcons job, if you're Arthur Smith, is that the right job? Is that the right situation to walk into given that roster, the cap space? You've got Matt Ryan at quarterback. Obviously some intriguing pieces on offense with Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley. Lots to work with on that side of the ball. Joe, if you're Arthur Smith, is Atlanta the right job? Do you take that if offered?
It's a good question. I don't know. I think that there are more appealing situations, especially at quarterback, because I just don't know with Matt Ryan. I don't know exactly where he is. I think he's on the decline to some extent. I think that's a tough decision. I know some people have the Falcons taking Justin Fields at 4. You know, I mean, I'd be more into that job if I knew that was happening. You know, you say, is it a good job? I mean, first of all, like, you also need to, like, who's the GM? Part of the question. I will say that by reputation, Arthur Blank is one of the most respected owners, and he's considered a great owner to work for. And so that's a big deal. I mean, when you compare that situation to what's going on in Houston, what's going on in Jacksonville, I mean, the Jets, the Lions, there's a lot of ownership concerns with a lot of these jobs. So from that perspective, I would think this would be pretty attractive. I mean, he has worked at a place that has been transformed. I think you start with, you know, Amy Adams Strunk controlling ownership and what that has meant. So he has seen the benefit of having an involved, you know, owner who is looking out for the best interest of people in the organization. So I would think that would be a pretty big priority for him. But still, it's a risk. And I guess the question that we don't know, or the answer we don't know, is, like, is he taking any job he gets offered, or how selective is Arthur Smith going to be? He's got a good situation. It's just that this offseason, this collection of jobs that are open, I don't know that I can recall more attractive ones in one cycle.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good situations out there to walk into immediately. I think if you're Arthur Smith, I'll say this. Now that he's getting second interviews, and I don't think this is some big surprise, if you're a Titans fan and you were hoping that Arthur Smith will be back next year and is going to be on a part of this team, a part of this offense again, I'm not saying it's totally impossible, but I would be, at this point, Joe, shocked if Arthur Smith is back with the Titans next year, just given the interest that he's generated. And look, once you start getting into second interviews with teams, you know that you're on the short list. So at this point, I think if you're a Titans fan and you're hoping that Arthur Smith is going to be back next year, I wouldn't get my hopes up too much longer, because to me, it seems like a foregone conclusion. He's going to get a job, whether it's Atlanta or elsewhere in this process.
Right. Yeah, it would be very surprising. Very surprising. When he's the one person who has been requested by everyone. And like you said, now you're getting into second interviews. It's a rapid ascent for him, but I mean, that's how it goes in this league. If you are directing an explosive offense near the top of the league, people are going to be interested in you. I mean, my gosh, they came and got Matt LaFleur 2 years ago after an average single season as a play caller. So, and he's done really well, by the way. So, Arthur Smith is probably going to be gone, and the Titans are probably going to be looking for a new OC.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. CJ from Pleasant View texts in and says, I think if Smith goes to head coaching, you take your time during the offseason to find someone of his caliber. You don't just go around and hire anyone that says they can do it. I think Smith needs to view every option he has with his ability of play calling and leadership, as well as his ability to create a rapport with his players. The options are all there for him to choose. And I think that's a good point by CJ in terms of he's going to have a lot of options. If you're Arthur Smith, you got to make sure you're choosing the right one. But as far as the Titans are concerned, if he's gone and you've got to fill that hole and that void at offensive coordinator, I'm interested to see how they handle it, because obviously last time you're promoting from within. Arthur Smith had no experience calling plays, and he asked to be interviewed for the job, ultimately got it, and we know how it's gone since then. It's gone very well for the Titans, particularly since Ryan Tannehill took over as quarterback. And a name we floated out a couple of weeks ago, Joe, when talking about this and maybe the potential of this job being open, was Bill O'Brien being fired from Houston. Obviously, you know, on the open market right now, but it looks like all indications are Bill O'Brien could end up at Alabama as their offensive coordinator to replace Steve Sarkisian. So with that in mind, with Bill O'Brien maybe out of the picture, how do you handle this if you're Mike Vrabel and the Titans? What are you looking for in terms of your next offensive coordinator? And I wonder how much continuity and how much maybe looking within is an option this time around.
Yeah, and Alabama's finalizing that deal, according to Chris Lowe, and it's just amazing. Like, all right, which coach out there needs a little bit of help, a little bit of rehab? Come on in, Bill. Nick will get you. We'll get you in here. We'll win a natty in a couple of years, and then we'll get you out to a new job. So I thought certainly he was one of those outside candidates who's still a quote-unquote inside candidate, because he's the guy who, of course, hired Vrabel into the NFL. He's also a guy Vrabel was with him in New England. I mean, I think it's more likely. It's not that there aren't other possibilities out there, but I would think an internal promotion is likely again here. If I had to guess, either or, you're going outside or you're promoting from within. Just based on what we've seen from Vrabel, I would guess promoting from within. Now, who will that be? I don't know. I think that you could make a case for, you could make a case for Pat O'Hara, the quarterback's coach, Keith Carter. It's amazing to think that you could make a case for Keith Carter when everyone wanted him fired last year. But offensive line coach is a very – that's a frequent point of elevation to OC, certainly, in the NFL. And, I mean, I don't know past that. I mean, Todd Downing is a tight ends coach. Arthur Smith was a tight ends coach before. Todd Downing has been an OC with the Raiders. So, in terms of resume, he may have the edge because he's actually done that before and had success. But that'd be my guess, that it would be internal.
That would be my guess, too, just based on, the way this offense runs. You want to keep it as fluid as possible and don't want to change up too much. I mean, I do think Arthur Smith brought some new ideas to the table and did a really good job, obviously, with Tannehill at quarterback and just the way the offense has been clicking. But I do think a lot of Matt LaFleur's philosophy and a lot of the things that he wanted to do, Arthur Smith took and added to his playbook. And I don't think that they just reinvented the wheel when Matt LaFleur left. And they talked about that a little bit. Mike Vrabel's mentioned that earlier this year, that it wasn't just like a total change with Arthur Smith coming in. But I am interested, it worked out this time for the Titans, where you have a guy coming in with not very much experience, at least in terms of calling plays. Can that work again, or does that eventually that approach maybe bite you if you're the Titans? That's something you got to balance if you're Mike Vrabel.
Yeah, and I do think in general Vrabel needs to be open to just someone new. And look, I mean, Charles Robinson made the point the other day that, I mean, look, like trust and relationship, that stuff is important, but I do think that you can't, I mean, look, again, let's compare this to Nick Saban. I mean, Nick Saban has never worked with Bill O'Brien before.
Right.
A bunch of these guys who he has brought in, this stream, especially of the OCs, it's like, yeah, who's a good coach out there? Yeah, bring him in. Let's see what he's got. What do you think? Give it a shot. And it's worked out. Again, helps when you have the best players. But he's been totally, and he's had to be, because when you're that successful, you lose so many guys to other opportunities. But it's worked out all right for him. And that's the other end of the spectrum, and that's extreme. You know, again, an entire staff turned over from the last national championship 3 years earlier. But I think you got to be open to just bringing somebody new. Matt LaFleur was the one, staff member in Vrabel's first year that was an outsider. It was no connection with him. And he was a guy who actually, interviewed for his job. But it worked out okay. And I think that you have to be open to the idea of just bringing in some fresh blood and, and benefiting from that. And I'm not convinced that the defensive staff, by the way, beyond the DC search, that there won't be more changes on the defensive staff too. I mean, I think they hurt this year from the loss of Kerry Combs, but also, I think Tyrone McKenzie too.
They did. And speaking of the defensive staff, you brought up Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, who joins us every Tuesday at 9 o'clock. He had some very interesting comments on Tuesday about Mike Vrabel and the way that he handled the defensive coordinator situation this year. And when we come back, we're going to react to that. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning. We'll have Predators head coach John Hines join us at 7:30 to look ahead to the season, which gets underway tonight for the Predators against the Columbus Blue Jackets. So looking forward to that. But Joe, right now, talking about the Titans, and we mentioned in the last segment the offensive coordinator situation, maybe some decisions the Titans are going to have to make very shortly in that regard. Well, decisions we know they're going to have to make are on the defensive side of the ball, given how bad they were on that side of the ball this year. And we had Charles Robinson on from Yahoo Sports earlier this week at 9 o'clock on Tuesday, like he is every single week. And he had some very interesting comments on Mike Vrabel and the way that he's handled this defensive coordinator situation all season long. Here's what Charles Robinson had to say.
I think it's worthwhile talking about this whole defensive coordinator thing and how Mike is handling it and the way he's commented on it. And this whole, now Shane Bowen was the defensive coordinator the entire season, led the meetings, called the plays. That is a thing. And it's interesting because it seems to be a thing that hovers around a lot of guys that come out of New England, and I think that's something they learn from Bill. And you see people leave New England and have a penchant for holding off on naming coordinator positions in which they want to be involved in that side of the ball. I've seen it happen with Bill O'Brien. It's happened with when Brian Flores was in New England and he didn't get that defensive coordinator tag, and then he ends up, ascending to being the head coach of the offense of the Miami Dolphins without ever having the DC tag in New England. You have conversations with guys about why that occurs, and when you talk to players, I do think that does matter.
So, Joe, you hear those comments from Charles about Vrabel, obviously coming from Belichick and the Patriot way, and at times we've seen them not name defensive coordinators, and Belichick's had his hands all over the defense. Do you think that has been a factor with Mike Vrabel from what you've seen of him so far? Do you think that maybe he has been, to his way or the highway in terms of defense and wanting to have his hands all over it? And did that ultimately, was that the chief reason that it came back and bit the Titans on that side of the ball this year?
Well, no. I mean, the chief reason is that their players weren't good. They paid all this money for players who weren't good, but – and they made moves, and they downgraded their talent level. But I mean, if that's the case, obviously it's just a 1 year thing, because we know the first 2 years he had a great defensive coordinator who he lured out of retirement, and he actually gave him the title too. It wasn't just like, hey, amazing. Dean Pease, Coach Emeritus. He was the defensive coordinator. So I mean, I hadn't thought of it in terms of the way Charles framed it, which is sort of, if you don't have someone with the title, then you are more, you're less hesitant to just jump in and take it over for yourself. I why would Vrabel be hesitant about that anyway? I don't know. I don't know if I buy that here. I think it's more maybe Shane Bowen rising, coach on the staff, a guy Vrabel goes back to Ohio State with him. But, you know, Bowen was a grad on that Urban Meyer staff that, that Vrabel was on when he got into coaching right after his playing career ended. So he's known him for a long time. And so it's sort of like give him a shot, but maybe is it too much to put on him? I've always looked at it that way, more like are you putting too much on Shane Bowen to give him the title? But regardless, and regardless of Vrabel saying that basically like media were making too much of a deal of this, I think Charles is dead on there. It does matter to players. And they all danced around it when we asked, and we asked in so many ways this year. I mean, I know I tried another different way with Kevin Byard at the end, and he did a great job of, you know, sort of, I mean, there's some confirmation from the players that, you know, it meant a lot what Dean Pease did and how he did it. And he was great without saying, yes, we need a coordinator, but I don't see how you could look at this whole year and not know that you have to have an established defensive coordinator, and to me, probably someone from the outside.
I would agree, and it's interesting. Like we've thrown out this theory, and people on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, have thrown it out as well, that maybe Vrabel wasn't naming a D coordinator this year to protect, you know, Shane Bowen from maybe some criticism or just see how it goes, experimentation, whatever way you want to put it. But it's interesting to me that you get through the whole season, and he's like, yeah, by the way, Shane Bowen was doing everything. I mean, he was calling the plays. He was running the meetings. He was doing everything that you want a defensive coordinator to do. He just didn't have the title. And number one, I think we can all agree, not giving him the title if that was going to be the case and he was going to be in charge is stupid. And titles absolutely mean something. But I was listening to Jared yesterday on Stillman and Company, and he threw this idea out there. Like, if you're Mike Vrabel, did you do Shane Bowen a disservice on Monday in your press conference? Like, if you have spent all this time, I guess, trying to shield Shane Bowen or not giving him the title because you didn't want, you know, criticism to come his way, and then at the end of the season, you basically come out and say, yeah, Shane Bowen had his hands on everything, and this defense was absolutely atrocious. Like, do you end up just absolutely hurting Shane Bowen that way to the point where Titans fans look at Shane Bowen right now? I mean, the reaction on Twitter that I've seen all week long is, you know, why is Shane Bowen here? What is he still doing here? He's been the de facto defensive coordinator. The outside linebacker room, which he coaches, was atrocious this year. Now, I know a lot of that was on the people you brought in as well, but I didn't feel like Vrabel did any favors to Shane Bowen throughout this process at all. Like, if you're gonna protect him all year long, don't come out at the end of the season and just be like, oh, yeah, by the way, he was in charge of everything on defense.
I'm a little confused by that because this is not the first time Vrabel has said that he called the plays or that he ran the meetings. He said that multiple times. Maybe he didn't say it exactly like that,
right?
But, I mean, like when he said that, I was like, okay, yeah, we knew this already. So I don't know, but you're right. I mean, there was a lot of reaction of, okay, great, then just fire him. It's like, well, he's been saying this. I mean, I don't know. I don't agree with anyone who says, well, then you have to fire Bowen right now. I mean, I think Bowen as the outside linebackers coach is fine. I can't blame Bowen for like what happened with Beasley or Clowney. I mean, Landry's played his butt off, and
right,
I think has gotten better. And then, you know, hey, he got Brooks Reed a sack.
Yeah, he did.
But like, just as an OLB coach,
give Shane Bowen a raise, baby. Brooks Reed coming in, getting sacks.
That's right. Tazar Skipper, all name team. I mean, look, again, like all the issues there, I can't look at. Like, I look at, so Jim Haslett comes in as inside linebackers coach. I mean, I saw a regression there with Rashawn Evans, you know. Is that on him? Is that because of, you know, Jarrell Casey's gone? I mean, you know, again, when the whole defense is bad, then do we blame that on guys not playing as well? I mean, guys not playing as well as part of the whole defense being bad. It's like chicken and egg with this stuff. But I don't think Bowen should be fired. I just think Bowen should not be the defensive coordinator next year. You know, he should be the outside linebackers coach, and someone new should be in there with the title of defensive coordinator. Or, you know, if Vrabel, you know, does Vrabel want, I mean, I don't see why he would want to do this. You know, just make himself head coach / DC. I just think you got to, the most important thing is personnel, but I think you need some fresh blood on that defensive staff after as poorly as things went this year.
I do want to pass along some breaking news in the NFL. This coming from Adam Schefter from ESPN. Quote, Jacksonville and former Ohio State head coach Urban Meyer are in advanced talks to see if they can finalize a deal, per league sources. They met again on Wednesday. At this time, it's Jacksonville as the one and only for Urban Meyer. Jacksonville owner Shad Khan's process has led him to Meyer, and Meyer is highly interested, and the two sides are interested in trying to finalize a deal this week. So, look, it's never over until it's over with Urban Meyer, but it's looking more and more likely that Urban Meyer is going to be the head coach in the AFC South of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Pretty incredible.
And so think of what the AFC South could be from a Vrabel perspective. You could have, you know, if Arthur Smith can get that Houston job, you got a protege at one rival. You got a mentor in Urban Meyer at another rival, guy who gave you your first college coaching job. And then you got the guy who beat you out for the Colts job as your other rival, yeah. Frank Reich. Imagine that. Imagine all the fun we could have. It won't quite be John Harbaugh fun, but it could be fun. That's pretty amazing. I mean, you know, Urban, clearly this is a Trevor Lawrence move. He makes this move, right? I mean, I guess it's a $12 million move too. But boy, what a story that would be. Urban Meyer, Trevor Lawrence, AFC South gets a lot more interesting, a lot more eyeballs in the AFC South moving forward if this is the case.
Let me ask you this. If Urban Meyer becomes the head coach of Jacksonville, do you think he buys a subscription to The Athletic at that point to you to keep up with the Titans? Or is he going to continue to text and email you to maybe copy and paste it so he can read his information that way?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think this might push Urban over the limit, and he might be able to afford it now. So okay. We got a deal going on too, Urban. We got a 30-day free trial right now, Urban. Nice. So someone get him that message.
Just text him. I mean, that's all you got to do.
Come on.
He doesn't need to be listening right now for him to hear that message. Just text him.
Yeah, I mean, you can text him right now. Ask him if he's going to take the Jags job.
Yeah,
hey, buddy.
Ask him how he's doing. You know, ask your good buddy Urban how his week is going.
Yeah.
All that. Yeah.
Sorry about Ohio State.
I will. I'll text him. Right. I'll text him. Sorry about the Buckeyes. Hope you're doing well. Here's the 30-day free trial. Give it a shot.
Very nicely done. This could be a big opportunity for Joe Rexrode here on the show. Pretty incredible. Like, look, Urban Meyer to me, I think he's great on TV, which is amazing because I've always thought, you know, in a head coaching setting, he's pretty smug. Like, I don't know if I'd go Brian Kelly level smug with Urban Meyer, but he just kind of seems
smug.
Like he might be unlikable to be around, but I think he's great on TV. So a loss for television, but could be a big gain for Jacksonville. I'm very interested to see if that happens. Like, can his style, can his offense work in the NFL? Because, you know, we had Charles on talking about it. You know, he felt like, you know, watching tape and talking to people, maybe people were catching up to it at college and at Ohio State. So can that work in the NFL? Can Urban Meyer adapt in the NFL? I think that'll be fascinating to watch if he gets the job in Jacksonville.
Yeah, like who would his OC be? You know, what direction is he going? How married to what he has done for so long is he going to be? But man, it'll be nice to have that Trevor Lawrence piece as part of your offense, whatever you're running.
There's no question about that. Trevor Lawrence gonna make a lot of people look good at the NFL level. When we come back, we'll switch back into the Preds. Predators head coach John Hines will join us. We'll look ahead to the season getting underway tonight. That's coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And it is a glorious day indeed. The Nashville Predators get their season underway tonight at Bridgestone Arena against the Columbus Blue Jackets. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in Predators head coach John Hines. John, what's going on, man? Thanks for taking time to join us.
Thanks for having me.
So, John, the journey to get here, obviously, has been very strange and filled with uncertainty along the way. But now that we're here, what are your feelings about opening night and the opportunity in front of you and this team?
Yeah, we're really excited. We're really excited to get started. I think from, you know, as you said, it's kind of been, at least in my time here, it's kind of been, you know, cut up where you come in for a couple months and you had the break, and then we came back for the play-in, then another long break, and now we're back together for, you know, hopefully everything works out well with the pandemic where we can be together for, a long period of time. But we really tried to use the time in between our things together to really talk to players, talk to our leaders, really talk about the identity of what this team needs to be extremely competitive. And, you know, what, why haven't we had as much success, you know, over the last couple of years, or particularly last year, you know, with everything that had gone on. And I really feel like we know what the core values of the team are now. It's from the players and the staff. And, you know, we talked coming into camp is that we have all those things set, but we can't have a say in do gap, meaning we're going to say we want to be a tougher team to play against. We want to have, you know, commitment. We need guys to have better seasons than they've had. And then now our behavior and actions have to back that up. And I feel in training camp, you know, we pushed the players. It was a competitive camp. I think the response every day was good from the players. They put it into it. You know, as a coach, you can put them in situations that are going to be extremely competitive, but there's got to be a certain amount of effort and intensity level from the players day in and day out. And I feel like in camp we did that. So now it's time to really test ourselves. We got an opening night tonight and against another team in another jersey, and let's see where how good our preparation was, and now we've got to put our actions on the ice.
Yeah, John, we had Matt Duchene on yesterday, and he had an interesting comment on that topic. He used the word baggage, but talking about, you know, this team, a lot of these guys, of course, on the team that go to the Stanley Cup final, and then maybe you get more focused on results. We want that result as opposed to what does it take to get there, you know, the process. I mean, is that something you saw when you came in? Do you feel that there's validity there, and do you feel like, I guess, that's changed? You've been able to change that some.
Well, I think sometimes when you've had success, it's about the expectation to get back to that level. And you can't put yourself in position to compete for the Stanley Cup if you don't get there. And I think the focus really should be short term. I think you hear it a lot of times in athletics about, you know, one day at a time, or, you know, we got to get better every day. We have to use every day to our advantage. And the reason you do that, and where it's not really hollow words, is you have to come in and have the mindset. The most important thing for us coming in was we had to establish our core values as a team. Okay, what are those things going to be? How are we going to be as a team on and off the ice? Then it comes into training camp. You can't be thinking about the regular season and training camp. It's got to be establishing your habits, your identity. It's how you practice. Like, you got to be in the moment, and you have to make use of that time to set yourself up. Okay, now we get to the regular season. You can't be talking about the Stanley Cup before the season starts. I think what you have to do is understand, what does it take to win? And then your focus has to be on that. Then when you get in the regular season, you know, it's about being a hard team to play against. It's being very consistent in your effort. It's not getting too high after wins or too low after losses, and really having a mindset that, you know, it's on the present. And then if you give yourself the opportunity through the regular season to put the work in and have the right mindset, then you give yourself the opportunity to get in the playoffs. Then you start, you know, okay, what's it going to take to get through the playoffs to be able to win? Sometimes when you go directly to the end result, you know, or you just get satisfied with, okay, you're winning, but maybe your goaltender's excellent, your style of game, the consistency level in your game, it's not a recipe to continue to win. That's why that short-term focus is really important.
Predators head coach John Hines on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And John, I've been around Roman Josi since he came into the league and have watched his evolution to this point. And he's always talked about getting better and wanting to add to his game. And obviously last year just operated at a ridiculous level, wins the Norris Trophy. Can Roman Josi still get better? Like, what have you seen from him so far in camp? Because it seems like that guy is always improving and adding to his game.
Yes, he's a special player in the sense that he's got unbelievable talent, but he combines that talent with coachability, strong work ethic. He doesn't take anything for granted. You know, he won the Norris Trophy, and, you know, being around him, you know, you guys, obviously people don't have the opportunity to be around him on a day in and day out basis like we do. And, you know, it's like he won the Norris Trophy, and his mindset has almost been when he won it, you know, it's an unbelievable accomplishment for him and for the organization, but it's like, okay, that's one piece of hardware, but I'm not satisfied. The most important thing for me is I want to win a Stanley Cup, and I want to be on a team that's going to be able to contend and compete. and his actions back it up. You know, even this year, he was here during the whole offseason. I think he went back to Switzerland for, 2 weeks. You know, he was here. He was leading the player skates. He changed some. He made some adaptations to his training program to just change things up to get better in that area. I know he's really going into the mental skills training. That part of his development is really, you know, on him, and he's come back and done the same thing. He drives practice. He drives the mentality, and I think you're seeing a Roman Josi that's a mature guy. He's really taken a strong interest in leadership. How does he become a better captain, more vocal? You know, how does he hold people accountable the right way as a captain? And I just see a lot of growth and maturity from him.
John, obviously Ryan Johansson was so good, you know, in the bubble. And there was a contrast between that and his regular season. Understanding that, you know, it's probably unrealistic to expect any player to have that maybe full playoff intensity every night of even a bridge regular season. What are your expectations for Ryan this year?
Well, you know, I think what you really want to do is if we move on from the regular season last year, from, you know, March at the pause, you know, some meetings and discussions with Ryan, with myself and some of his teammates. You know, I think he dedicated himself off the ice to his fitness, and the reason he was able to have a good play-ins in the summer was because of the preparation that he did, you know, during the off time. And then he came in and he had the engine. He had the engine, the motor, the mindset to be able to play the way that he needs to play. And, you know, I think one of the learning lessons for him was after that is, you know, what were the reasons? You know, it's not just about, it's what we continue to talk about. It's not just about, oh, Ryan played well. Well, we want to get this guy, help him get to a high, high level for us this year. It's why. Why did you do that? It was the training. It was the dedication. It was his mindset. He was moving his feet on the ice. He played a 200-foot game. There wasn't a lot of lag in his game. And, you know, he put a lot of work in, again, between the play-ins and now. And then the next level is just, you know, with some of these guys is they're very talented players. And like you said, some nights they're going to make huge impacts on the score sheet. Some nights they might not have their legs or they might be a little banged up. Do they have a B game? Can they do the things that it takes to win that don't take any talent? You know, and it's consistency of effort. It's finding ways to help your team win when maybe you're not at your best or you're not having your best night. But are you a guy that we can rely on as coaches and your teammates can rely on you? So when number 92 gets in the lineup, everybody knows what they're getting every night. And if Ryan brings that, and I know that's his mindset to date, he's going to have a good season for us. He's going to help us win a lot of hockey games.
Predators head coach John Hines on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And, John, I've talked to you before about Philip Forsberg, and one of the things you've talked about is trying to get him to play more with power and then let the skill take over after that. I think we've seen flashes of that from Philip. If he's able to do that and approach the game that way this year, what do you think the potential is for Philip Forsberg playing that way and playing with that style?
I think if Phil plays that way consistently, and I do believe he's another guy. I think he has the mindset that he has something to prove. He wants to have a strong year, but it was also, okay, this is how we're dealing with the guys. Okay, Phil, we want to have a strong year. Do you think you can be a top 10 winger in the league? Do you think you can be a player that drives our team night in and night out? You know, those are the things he wants to do, and he has that ability. He has the hockey sense. He has the body and the power to do it. He has the skill to be a top winger in the game. And now, again, it comes down to his consistency and really playing to an identity. And now, okay, Phil, what are the behaviors we need to accomplish this goal? And that's how we've worked with our guys. So, you know, right now I think our mindset is correct as a team and as individuals. And now the bullets are going to start flying tonight. And now it's the next step for us. They've accomplished that in training camp. Now we've got to do it in the regular season.
Talking to Predators head coach John Hines. John, the same seven opponents, tons of back-to-backs. How different, how strange is that going to be? And what's that going to mean on the chippiness scale as things get rolling here?
Yeah, you know, it is a little different just in the sense you have a lot of two-game sets. Sometimes they'll be back-to-back or it could be game day off game. So, you know, I think preparing for an opponent, and then you also have the ability between games with the same opponent to kind of make some some adjustments or lineup things that you feel are going to be important. So it's going to be a little bit, from I think a coaching and playing perspective, a little bit like a playoff series, just in the sense that you're preparing a two-game set and you have opportunities to make changes or not make changes, like a playoff series in between a game one and a game two. So that'll be a little bit different, but I think exciting. And then to your question about the chippiness, and I think the rivalries, I think they're going to get heated up pretty quick, you know, because you're playing the same teams. You know that you got to get through those teams in your division to get into the playoffs. So, you know, I think the intensity level of every game, the frequency of seeing the opponents, you know, the back-to-back, like, you don't have time to forget. You could have a chippy game against the New York Rangers in New York November 10th, and you don't see them until, you know, March 24th. So sometimes those things, there's too much of a gap between those games. Where here, you're going to see those guys, you know, probably within the same month.
John, last thing for you here, and you brought up the schedule there with how compact it is, and you're going to be playing a lot of times, maybe back-to-backs, three games in four nights. It's important every year to have two goaltenders operating well and being efficient for you, but how much more important is that this year with the schedule being what it is? And to that point, what have you seen from Pekka so far in training camp and as we head into the season here?
Yeah, sure. I do think that it's, you know, obviously with the condensed schedule, and, you know, every week is almost, you're basically four games a week, and then I think depending on how it goes, you might play, you know, Sunday, and then you play Tuesday, Wednesday, back-to-back, and you're playing again Friday. So there's very few weeks where you have, say, one or two days in between games. So I think the importance of your both goaltenders being able to play and utilizing them is going to be, it's going to be important for every single team, as we know. And those are the reasons why, because there's really no extended break to be able to give your goaltender a rest if he's played a lot of hockey or had a tough night or whatever it is. And I think Pex has come back. You know, he's in a great frame of mind. I think he's had a good off season. You know, I think mentally he knows that we're going to need two guys. I think the things going on in his personal life, he's just had a young son. You know, I think his personal life is doing really well. I think he's excited to come back and compete with Juice for playing time. And I think he knows that he's got a great opportunity here. I think he's had a strong camp.
Predators head coach John Hines has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. John, really appreciate you taking time to join us. Looking forward to chatting with you throughout the season. And good luck as you get things rolling tonight against Columbus.
All right. Thanks, guys. I always enjoy talking with you, and have a great day. And looking forward to tonight.
Absolutely. John Hines has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. When we come back, we'll react to a little bit of what John Hines had to say there. The season getting underway tonight. What do we think of the way John Hines has handled this so far, given some tough circumstances that have been around the team since he's taken over as head coach? We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. The Preds flagship 102.5 The Game is giving away three pairs of tickets tomorrow to the Preds and Blue Jackets game on Saturday night at Bridgestone Arena. Every hour tomorrow, starting at 6 a.m. through the 5 o'clock hour, listen for the cue to call. And when you hear it, call 615-737-1025. The third caller will qualify to see the Preds, or to win a pair of tickets to see the Preds on Saturday night against Columbus. So make sure that you're tuning in for that. One of the few ways now to get in the building. And Joe, we know tonight won't be the same in terms of the atmosphere at Bridgestone Arena. Obviously, no fans in the building, very limited amounts from tickets that have either been given away, very limited media members allowed in the building as well. So I'm very interested to see, you know, what the atmosphere is like tonight. I mean, obviously, the Predators have some experience with it in the bubble in Edmonton for those four games against Arizona. But it's one thing to be, you know, in Edmonton, in a place where you're not very familiar with. It's another thing to be in Bridgestone Arena and have a home game and to just look around and for the stands to be empty. I'm interested to see how the players respond to that. And, you know, we've seen at times that place get loud, that place carry the Predators to maybe a 10-15-minute surge of momentum in a game. And obviously, I mean, you're not going to have that this season to begin with, at least. So very interested to see how the players handle that tonight.
Yeah, you know, Matt Duchene talked yesterday about even the difference for him. Like, he, during one of the practices, like, looked up, his family was up in one of the boxes. So, like, that's still better than Edmonton, right?
Right.
Whether it's just no one and you got the piped in noise. I think what he said yesterday, he said that even when it's like 1,000 people, yeah, that'll make a difference. I mean, and certainly, you know, there's more of a difference when you're talking about an indoor arena. Of course, you know, the noise gets kept in. There's obviously, it's also tougher to have crowds in a pandemic in an indoor arena. But yeah, it'll be very strange. And I think it's cool that they get to play on their home ice now. I mean, I think that still makes a difference. The familiarity, you know, still feels like, you know, you're taking on a team in your environment. But talk about a difference. What this is going to look like and sound like early season compared to what we're used to, a pretty massive difference.
So we had Predators head coach John Hines on with us in the last segment, and I said it earlier this week, I think now is when I think the evaluation period really begins with John Hines. I mean, you're coming in last year, I think January 7th was the day that he came in here, and you've got basically a month and a half, 2 months in the season, and the plug gets pulled. I mean, you're done at that point. You're on pause. You come back in for the play-in round against Arizona, but everything's just a jumbled mess at that point. To me, now that you've had some time, you've had an offseason to kind of choose what you're going to do, what system you want to run, what fits your players the best, and change personnel to a certain degree alongside David Poile to more of an identity that you want to play with. To me, the evaluation period starts now for John Hines. So, Joe, as we sit here, as you look ahead at this team and this season with the Predators, what do you think the key is for John Hines to having long-term success here in Nashville? It's easy to say, just, yeah, go out there and win the Stanley Cup. But in order to build this team up to where it's back to a point where it's contending and competing consistently, what do you think that's going to take from John Hines?
Well, you know, does he have enough players this year? I'm not sure about that. Like right now, I think he's coaching a team that we both have picked to, you know, to get into the playoffs, but not with a big margin for error. You know, I mean, I think he's right now he's coaching a moderately talented team. Now, again, they can prove us wrong and be better than that. And if they do, then I think you're going to have to look at him and say he must have done some things that, you know, have made a difference for these guys. I mean, I do think that, well, look, whenever you jump in midseason for a team, usually that means you're taking over a situation that wasn't great. Now, this is not like some situations. It was still a good team, and Peter Laviolette had a lot of success. But, I mean, I think that there's some grace period for John Hines. He still hasn't had – I mean, I agree with you. Like, the evaluation, I think it's fair to – I think there's a more fair evaluation period now for him than last year. You come in, you have a pandemic, you're in a bubble. I mean, we saw some good things in the bubble, I thought, you know, that indicated that he had reached some guys. We talked about Ryan Johansson last segment. I mean, I think some of it is that. It's like if you know a player is underperforming under the last coach and then the new coach can unlock some things for that player, well, that's a good comment on the coach. I think Granlund last year is one of those guys who suddenly seemed to be a new kind of player under John Hines. So your big picture question is, I mean, I think you want to make the playoffs this year. You know, you want to win enough, but all this talk about being harder to play against, you also want to see that, you know, he obviously is very focused on the intangibles, on the process, on the daily approach. I think that makes him like most coaches, but now we'll see if that's actually resonating and if that's paying off in the performances on game nights.
Agreed. And look, I think a big part of his success and the tenure that he has here depends on getting guys like Johansson and Forsberg and Arvidsson, Duchesne to play like they're paid to play on a nightly basis. I mean, I think that's the number one job he's got with this group. And number two, you know, when John Hines was hired, a lot was made about his ability with the younger players to develop them, to bring them along, to help get them to a place where they're able to come in and contribute. And I think that is what I'm looking for, too, out of John Hines. And I realized, I mean, the setup now is much different to accomplish that than it was when he was in New Jersey. I mean, obviously with the pandemic, you just haven't had a lot of time around Tolvanen and Tomasino and some of these other young guys. But I do think, you know, if you look back through the history of the Predators franchise, one thing that they have struggled with is developing young forwards that they drafted and bringing them along to playing at pretty high levels in the top six. And, you know, Victor Arvidsson, a draft pick of theirs, that's played really well, obviously. But just think about their top six at the moment. I mean, Forsberg, they didn't draft. They traded for him. Now, they basically brought him along because he was 18 when he got here, but not a draft pick. Right. Ryan Johansson, not a draft pick. Matt Duchene, not a draft pick. I mean, you need to have some young guys, whether it's Tolvanen, Tomasino, or as they continue to move forward here in the next few years with the draft, you've got to have some young guys come in and compete. Because in today's NHL, we know this, when you've got high-level players and high-salary players like Josi and Johansson and Duchene and Ellis, all these different guys you want to run down the list of the Predators and their salary cap, eventually, I mean, you need guys to come in on entry-level deals and to be able to compete and to be able to help your team win. And that goes back to the kind of the youth movement conversation we had earlier in the show. The Predators, they're just not there yet from that department. So I think that's part of his job, too, over the next couple of years, is finding ways to bring some of these younger guys along more quickly than we've been used to seeing and getting them ready to play. That was a big part of just the kind of the conversation around John Hines when he was hired. And I'm interested to see how quickly he's able to go about doing that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I also think that, you know, that's why, I mean, to me, when we're talking about judging John Hines and everything, I still think that this is much more here moving forward, judging David Poile, you know, and the choices he's making and the farm system and the hope that they've got some people who can, you know, who can fill those spots and come up, because obviously there's been a lot of buying in the last few years. And if you look at this farm system relative to the rest of the league, it's considered one of the most depleted, you know? So, I mean, this is also, those guys have got to be available. You know, the talent has got to be there. Tolvanen, if Tolvanen doesn't work out, like, I'm not going to sit here and say, well, John Hines, man, you needed to figure it out. You know, I think you're going to go back and look at the choice of Tolvanen. So I think it's more, I think that's more, you know, the person under inspection, I guess, in this organization for all he's done. I mean, it's still a what have you done for me lately world in professional sports.
It is, and I'm not saying, like, you know, the clock is now ticking on John Hines or anything like that. I'm just saying, to me, when it comes to the John Hines tenure, the period of evaluation, well, I think the work is really beginning for him. To me, it's now. Like, this is now for John Hines. Going into this season, obviously a different season with the challenges of a 56-game regular season and a pandemic, so it's still not ideal and not normal, but to me, this is really kind of the first fingerprint that he's going to have on this team to seeing what the identity, what this team's going to look like. Because, I mean, as we know, Joe, this is a crucial year. If you come out this year and you struggle again and you don't make the playoffs, or maybe even if you're out early, you still have guys in the primes of their career and with a core you feel like should be competing. So I'm interested to see, you know, if it doesn't go well this year, what does this team look like next year? I mean, this is still a pretty big year in terms of the overall window for this group. So to me, that part of it begins under John Hines this year.
Well, I agree. So let's say it goes poorly. Like, they're at the bottom of this division. They don't really sniff the playoffs. You know, like, it'll be fair to say, okay, well, John Hines, you didn't do what, you know, you didn't do well enough. You didn't do what you were hoping to do. I mean, I think that's fair, but I still think it'll be early for him. I think it's just a lot more likely that John Hines is coaching a much different team that probably does get blown up next offseason.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So that puts a lot of pressure on the players this year to go out and perform, and quite frankly, may need some of that, may need some of the pressure to be on the players and see how they respond to it. If they respond well, I think you feel good about the group moving forward. If they don't, probably time to shake things up and come in with a different group moving forward. So obviously a really important year for the Predators that gets started tonight against the Columbus Blue Jackets. When we come back, we'll switch gears and get back into the NFL playoffs. Trey Wingo will join us. That's coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.